Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. Not sure what was going on with the start of the show there. I think my Stream Deck probably needs an update. Some of the buttons and sequences seem to not be working. But here we are. It is episode 274 of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. We're here to bring you the latest and greatest geeky news of the week. I am your host, Sean Hayes. And a little bit of a light news week. We got some big items, but not like a very wide breadth of news to report on this week. So this might be a little bit of a shorter episode. Yeah, hope everyone's been doing well. It's been a whole up and down for us here this week. Just getting some health issues taken care of. Managed. but then, you know, getting all sorts of house projects done. So, but later in the episode, I will have some fun and interesting things to talk about. And our deep dive is going to be a review of my time at Portia or Portia. I don't know if it's Portia or Portia because it's spelled Portia. But, you know, because it's a game, like it might be called Portia or something. But it's another sort of life sim, sort of in the vein of like Story of Seasons, Stardew Valley, Harvest Moon. That sort of stuff, but it's got its own sort of twist on things. But I'll talk about that a bit later. So hope everyone's been doing well. And why don't we get right into our quick fire news and talk about that? We've got some very exciting things. Okay, so DC Studios is going to be the new or DC Films. I don't know if it's DC Studios or DC Films is what the new name's going to be. According to Hollywood Reporter, James Gunn and Peter Safran have been promoted to co-chairs and co-CEOs of the DC's sort of new film, TV, and animation division. James Gunn will serve as the creative director, sort of on the CEO on the creative side, and Safran will oversee the business and production side. So this is interesting. It seems like DC, I don't know if this will affect like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, since Gunn's supposed to be working on that. This is a way, you know, DC obviously had some success with James Gunn's take on Suicide Squad. And so they basically want to go all like they like his vision. And so they were willing to pony up and make him sort of the head. And it's interesting that it's wrapping all three elements together. So I know the animation division is a very big one for DC. So, that's kind of the big news. So we'll have to see what comes of that. If there's now some sort of resurgence in DC films, or if they sort of go back to doing like just individual self-contained stories, or if they still push this sort of DC, the DCEU or something, or DC, you know, extended multiverse or whatever. or, you know, if they go back to sort of what superhero films were doing, you know, prior to the MCU and just like, yeah, we're just going to do we're going to do an umpteenth Batman film and just a different take on Batman. And like, it doesn't have to be connected to any of the other Batman films. So yeah, I don't know. It's a bit of an exciting news. It came as a bit of a shock, you know. I don't know if it was Disney just, I don't know. It seems for someone who worked on a number of Disney and Marvel projects to then go to DC. Interesting. Interesting, to say the least. Next up, Doctor Who. In a surprise announcement, David Tennant is going to return for a 3-episode special, not reprising his role as the 10th Doctor, but returning to that form for the 14th Doctor before Shuti Gatwa assumes the role of the 15th Doctor after that 3-episode special. That was completely out of the blue. And it's one of those things where, like, they've never done it before. Like, they've never had a doctor, like, previously turn into a, or, you know, turn into, like, regenerate into a previously visited form. But given some of the lore that's out, like, there's no reason not to try and do that. So, I don't know. I don't know if this is a way to sort of, I don't know, get the Doctor Who fandom sort of in a bit of a complacency for the 3 episodes, you know, throw them Tennant. since Gatwa has been getting quite a bit of heat from people who have better things to do with their time. By virtue of the fact that it will be the first Black Doctor. So, well, as far as the main role, I think there was something going on with Jodie Whittaker's series where they may also have had a Black Doctor. I couldn't follow it after that point. It was getting a little too off the rails for me. In addition, new seasons for Doctor Who will stream exclusively on Disney Plus outside of the UK and Ireland. So that's an interesting twist on things. We also got a new logo, and it's a sort of quote unquote new logo. In that, like, it seems to be inspired by a sort of classic Doctor Who logo potentially. As far as what I understand, but hopefully that information that I received was not mistaken. was correct. The new logo, very, very stark departure from anything that we've had in the sort of Ninth Doctor onward era. It very much feels like a Disney Pixar sort of take on the logo. So there we go. And I believe that starts 2023, the new season. So I'd imagine we might get the 3-episode special might be like the, you know, Christmas and things like that, as they typically do. We'll be interested to see that changeover and what goes on with that. And I got to get caught back up. I got to figure out how to get caught back up. Because I think current seasons are on HBO Max. So, all right. Our final piece of quickfire news, as I said, not a whole lot. And again, like, this is stuff that, you know, I particularly find interesting. You know, I'm not super, like, I can't really figure if it's worth talking about, you know, some integration for, you know, like a piece of software, or, you know, there's like a new piece of, like, there's a new peripheral for your Steam Deck or something. Like, I don't know. Like, a lot of that stuff doesn't seem to, like, make a whole lot of waves, and it's just sort of like people wanting to shill products. So that said, last bit of news, Vampire Survivors version 1.0 full release is out now. So very exciting. This, you know, easily one of the best indie games out there for your value includes testing for a new engine that is supposed to work better with PCs, because I didn't realize this was an Android game first. Will include an inverse mode, endless mode, and a Twitch chat integration function where Twitch chat can control, like, you can set it up so that Twitch chat gets to control, like, what power-ups you get, when power-ups happen, you know, when, like, certain, like, rerolls and stuff are done. So you can really, like, give your run over to your chat if you're a Twitch streamer. Very excited about this. I think games that have Twitch chat integration are really fun. You know, that, like, it gives the viewership, like, a hand in playing the game. So, as opposed to it being a passive activity. So, yeah. And congratulations to the team on their on their version 1.0 release. It's, I haven't played in a while, but I played a ton of it. looking forward to getting back into it. It's just a nice, you know, you can pop in. You don't have to worry about plot or anything. It's just like an old school arcade style game. And I appreciate that, you know, being able to just, like, sit down, plunk in a half hour and be done with your session. So, very excited. You know, I'm all for testing out this new engine and trying out Twitch chat integration. So maybe a special, Vampire Survivor stream, happening, in the near future. And that's it. That's it for our deep dive. So, we're going to switch gears now and talk about my time at Porsche. So, my time at Porsche, not a super new game. It's been out for, I think, at least a year, maybe a year or two. It is on, I believe it's on all platforms. So I'm currently playing it on PC, because there was a big sale on Steam. So, and from what I've heard, consoles are still missing, like, a couple updates that they've done for PC. So, so that's something to keep in mind, is, there have been some content updates that have not gotten pushed out to consoles yet, that kind of really affect certain characters, we'll say. So, in a nutshell, this is a game in which, instead of, like, you arrive in town and you inherit a farm, you inherit your dad's workshop, and he was a builder. So essentially, like, you're kind of like an engineer, but it also incorporates, like, farming and things like that. So, like, you can get a coop, you can get a shed. They call it a shed, but, like, it's meant to be a barn. You know, you can raise fish. So you can do, like, typical farm. You know, you can get garden boxes to grow crops. But the main focus of the game is you are fulfilling sort of civic engineering requests for both the town and the townsfolk. And so a lot of social elements in the game of, like, you know, giving people gifts, chatting with them, playing activities and things. And I think all in all, it's a really nice addition to the genre. I have to say, was a little turned off by the art style at first, but I think it's definitely started to grow on me. Of just mostly how all the characters look, which is, it's, you kind of have to get used to the art style for the characters. But it kind of hits all the right notes of gathering and crafting and, learning recipes and getting sort of like an engine going, of oftentimes literal engines for producing, like, materials in order to build things. So, like, you might be tasked with, like, building bridges or bridge supports or an irrigation system or, you know, like, helping to build a tunnel. Flashbacks for all of my Massachusetts listeners for that one. It has a couple different subsystems that sort of set it apart from other genres, where it also has like a sort of pseudo RPG stat system built in, where like you have like attack and defense values, and like crit chance and crit damage and things like that. Combat itself, it's often used for just like going out and attack like wild animals or bug monsters or something for resources. There are a couple dungeons in the game, to also like you go fight like bandit rats and, sort of weird mutant monsters, you know, and like robotic monsters. But the combat system's not great. It's a little janky. You know, the dodging hitbox is often a little out of whack. And you're basically just like, how fast can you click to, you know, button mash? You know, there are no like special abilities or skills or anything. So it's often you're just like swiping a sword. And you're just swinging a sword, and that's like the limit of the combat system in real time. So it's not like turn based or anything. Which, you know, I mean, for most of the other sort of life sim games, like they don't typically have a very robust combat system. It's just it would be something where if you're going to go out and put that much effort into it, you know, maybe at least tighten up the mechanics a bit and, you know, maybe incorporate other types of weapons. There's like one set of ranged weapons, and like swords. And then I think later on you can get hammers. And it's basically like, you know, hammers are just big, slow, and they deal area damage. And then swords are, you just slash. And like, that's the only difference. And then the ranged weapons, like there's literally only two in the game, and they require ammo, and you have to craft the ammo, and it's a pain, and it takes a while to reload. So like oftentimes enemies are closing in on you. So, and you don't deal enough knockback to really keep them at bay. So, combat's not great. I think the rest of the game more than makes up for it. Fishing feels good. Fishing consists of, you get like a bubble around the fish, and as you reel it in, line tension is simulated by like a red bubble that fills up. And if it fills up completely to, like if the bubble completely turns red, then your line breaks and you lose the fish. Similarly, where your cursor is, where the bubble is, has to match up with where the fish is, or you increase line tension. And so, like, if you try and reel it in, the line will just immediately break. And then, you know, basically what kind of fish you're trying to get, like, the bubble might fill faster or slower. And as you keep your bubble centered on the fish and you're not actively reeling it in, that tension bubble gradually decreases in size. It gets smaller, so that you're doing this sort of reeling it in and giving slack out sort of rhythm, as well as moving your line along with the fish as it's swimming in the water. I think for folks who want something a little bit more than Animal Crossing and other just like button prompts, like you push a button and you catch a fish when prompted, but maybe not quite the subsystem that Stardew has. This is a good fit, I think. Fish are a great way to get money, which is good. You know, I like when fishing is actually a viable source of income. You know, it kind of falls off really early on in Stardew Valley. So that makes me sad, given all the effort that you have to go into do fishing in Stardew. What else? Social mechanics in this game. Lot more in depth than a lot of other similar, like sort of farming life sim games. So it's still basically the idea of like you go to talk to people and that builds up relationship points. You give them gifts and that builds up relationship points. But there are tiers of your level of friendship. And I think Stardew did this as well. Where like at certain tiers, you know, in Stardew you might get heart events. Whereas in this one, like it gives you passive benefits and they're independent to a particular NPC. And so like some NPCs, like they don't give you anything for being friends with them. And that's fine. But other ones, like particularly ones that you can later date and become, you know, have as a spouse, you'll get several tiers that just get progressively better and better. So there are plenty of NPCs where if they own a shop, you get bigger and bigger discounts at their shop. There are ones that will give you stat boosts. Like there's a all of the members of sort of like the town defense corps who are just like rangers that go out and like patrol the wilderness and you know help protect the townsfolk from monsters. All give you like combat stat buffs. So and then their leader like gives you a crit chance buff if you become friends enough with them, which is really good. So I like that, you know, and so obviously like you want to try and be friends with everybody, but it also is like, it's interesting. Like it often relates to, you know, either what they do in town or their personality. So like there's a person that works for the newspaper and if you become friends with her, like it builds your stamina points for the day because she's always running around. So like she's got a lot of energy. And so being friends with her gives you more energy to do stuff during the day. So I like that. And then as you become more friendly with people, it unlocks the ability to do, they call them play dates. I don't know if I like that name because like play dates are what you think of where like you set your kids up to have like little play dates with their friends. But you know, for like grown adults, like, oh, we're going to have a play date. It's like that. It sounds a little weird. In reality, it's just you schedule a time to go hang out and there are a bunch of activities you can do around town. And as you do them, you know, it builds up like a happiness meter. And depending on how, you know, you're hanging out went, you might build up more relationship points. And I think that's something that is a nice addition of like, it's not just a very mechanical of like, talk to this person, give them gifts, we're done. Like, you know, and instead you can, you know, choose to like hang out with them further and then kind of like do different activities. So like you can go to the town restaurant and like grab a meal. They have like an arcade in the back where you can play games. There's like a couple like playground equipment type stuff of like swings and seesaws and everything. And then there's like some other activities that open up later on in the game that present other opportunities for hanging out. And then if you decide to, and then like that option then can change into like going on a date if it's a NPC that you're romancing. None of the activities change. They just, for whatever reason, decided to make it a different button, I guess. And then like sometimes NPCs will have, a desired item. So like if you gift them that item, you get like bonus points and they all have their own special lists and everything. So yeah, I think it's a much more robust social system, I think. And it is an absolute travesty that the best character in the game, his name is, I think it's Abu, or Abu, but his title is Papa Bear, and he's like a bear that they think got mutated, due to like the story of the game is like there was an apocalypse that happened. And it seemed like it was like a robot uprising and mutagens and everything. Pollution ran rampant and it caused all sorts of like mutant creatures and wily robots and things. And so like basically this bear became self-aware and intelligent. And there's like a character that he took in and like adopted. And so like he just wanders around the woods in like a bathrobe and he's great. Like, and he doesn't speak, in, you know, the language of the rest of the townsfolk. So for me, he doesn't speak English. He just sort of like makes bear noises, but like very clear, like, you know, goes to hang out with the townsfolk and like, there's a quest very early on where like he's too hot because he's got fur and he's wearing a bathrobe and it's like summertime. So you make him a little, you know, fan hat to keep him cool. And, yeah, he's the best NPC and you get nothing from befriending him. And that's an absolute travesty. So I don't know what we got to do, but I don't know. We deserve something better. I think so the gameplay loop is pretty good. It's often a case of you kind of build up your, I mean, it's intended to be playable at a very slow pace, right? So it's not like Stardew can often get like very hectic in trying to keep things moving and like getting things done. Whereas this game, like it feels like it, I mean, there's definitely time crunches, but it seems like the story will progress if you decide to follow it or not. So like if you don't take certain civic planning projects, like there are other rival building companies, like construction companies in town that will pick those up and do them for you. You just don't get any credit. You don't get any money. You don't get any prestige for doing it. And instead they do. But it means that the story, you know, will still progress if, say, you want to just go pop off and like go fishing for an entire day and or for a week straight, just do fishing. Or you want to decide that I'm not going to build anything. I just want to farm chickens or ducks or, you know, I want to just do enough so I can get a horse, you know, and just ride around town and do whatever I want. That said, doing the commissions is like kind of the best way to get cash. So, one of the things to figure out is if you're just starting the game, don't skimp on building, necessary infrastructure. Like you're going to want to make sure that you get a good engine going because a lot, as you get into like the mid game, like by the end of your first year, you are going to be constantly running multiple machines in order to get all the materials you need to fund projects. And it is constant. So, making sure that you get a good setup ahead of time and making sure that you have a good routine for getting resources to fuel all that stuff. And being flexible enough to handle like other commissions as well, is really good. Is the best advice that I can give. Also, go fishing. Like that's like you do commissions and you go fishing and like you are going to be set for money. So, yeah. All in all, like there's still a couple other areas I've hoped. So like you start with sort of the main area. And then as you progress through the story, you do civic projects to basically like you build bridges or tunnels and everything to unlock other areas. So I have unlocked the third area, which is a desert. The first area is like an island. That's like a very small island just off the, like on the other side of a river. So I feel like I have like two or three more areas still to unlock. And I'm kind of approaching like the end of fall year one. So I'm thoroughly enjoying it. So let's see, what are people usually looking for? So there is a fast travel system. I kind of like how it works. So fast travel is unlocked through the use of civic projects. It is a civic project that you do. And you actually have to build the fast travel points and then go to where it is and set up. They're basically bus stops. And you go build the bus stop, and then you bring it to wherever the location is, and you just drop it, and then that unlocks that as a fast travel location. It does not cost any money. It just costs you time. Because as with most other life sim, farming sim games, you are sort of on the clock, you know, for like a daily timer. You can set it to slow speed. I would highly recommend that. And what that does is every second in real time is a minute in game time. And so basically a day, assuming that you're just constantly, like, that you're not opening menus or doing anything that would stop time. A day, a full day is, let's see, so you wake up at 7 to potentially, we'll say 2 a.m. You know, 7 to 7 is 12 hours, 17, so 19 minutes. so we'll call it 20 minutes, you know. So a day should last you 20 minutes, assuming that you don't open any menus or anything like that. So generally, you know, a half hour of playtime to get through like a single day. And you can pack a lot in that day. So, yeah, there's a lot of little fiddly bits to unlock with it. Sometimes it does feel a bit overwhelming. And I wish there were... The UI was tightened up a little bit so that you could keep track of things without having to like go back to specific areas, like to go back to a specific building in town to check something. Like your workshop gets a rank as you do more commissions and projects. And it would be nice to be able to check that without having to go to like the commission center, which is only open during certain hours. So it's like, you know, if it's late at night, why can't I just check what my workshop rank is? Like, why do I have to wait until the next morning to then go there? So, I feel like I've still got a whole lot more to go. I'm very excited about it. Make friends with Papa Bear, because he's the best. He's the best character by far. So what are things? You can adopt animals. So you can have, obviously you can get livestock, but there are also, two pets that you can adopt. And I will leave it at that. Also there is a sequel called My Time at Sandrock, which is like another city in the setting. Haven't looked into that at all. I think once I finish My Time at Portia, or get to a point where I feel finished, maybe I'll go check that out. See, because like it's like a desert city, to see how that differs. Like if you're just doing the building thing again, or if there's something different, and what sort of stuff do you need to build? It would also be really interesting to see if it's a game where your progress, like your save file for My Time at Portia, carries over. So yeah, all in all, I rate this pretty highly. There's definitely some bugs that are still in the game, unfortunately. But that's kind of always going to be the case when you have very complicated systems going on. So pretty much any time that you have NPCs like that are all out in an open world and they all have their own routines and paths and things, sometimes, you know, they can get stuck. They can get into some weird looping behaviors and things. Usually it self resolves pretty quickly. So I haven't had anything game breaking. They're like mines. They're not really dungeons because like there's no enemies, but there are places where you can go mine thing, like mine ore and relics and stuff. It is possible to get stuck because it's a destructible environment. However, they include on the map an option to port yourself back to the entrance so that if you do get stuck, you can kind of fix what's going on. So Yeah, and you know what? Another bit of advice, until you get a stable and you can buy a horse, rent horses every opportunity you get. Mount speed is a wonderful thing in an open world game, and I did not start doing it until it feels far too late now. And especially since you're able to do it before you can unlock the fast travel, it will dramatically cut down on your travel time. So, couple recommendations there. So yeah, ultimately, you know, I give it two thumbs up, this game. You know, I got it because I got it on the Steam sale. Just because trying to pull back on spending habits a little bit. So a lot of games that I'm playing might not be brand new games or I have to wait, you know, like, I don't know if there's going to be very many launch date games, for me, in the near future. So definitely if it's on sale, but you know, I think even at full price, you know, there's plenty of content to sink your teeth into. So yeah, it's a lot of fun and I highly recommend it especially if you're a fan of the sort of Stardew Valley, Animal Crossing, you know, Disney Dreamlight Valley, Harvest Moon, Story of Seasons, et cetera, genre. So that is going to wrap up our deep dive discussion, our review of my time at Portia. I would recommend checking it out. I would say, you know, I would try and play it on PC, just because it has a bunch of extra quests and patches and things that like console versions don't have yet. As far as I can tell from like the fandom wiki, you know, it might be the case where console versions have been updated. So yeah, definitely check it out. I recommend it. So with that, let's get into quest log. So quest log is where each week I make a geeky goal. You know, it's usually art related, might be gaming related, you know, just something. As something for a way for me to keep myself accountable for doing, you know, something sort of geeky. And related to this podcast. So I said last week, I was going to start one piece of art for my 8-Bit Adventures comic book. I did do that. I started work on the cover. So what I have for the people who are watching the video version of this podcast is a little bit of a snippet from the cover. This image is also available on, I did share this out on Twitter and on Facebook. Those are available as well for audio listeners if you want to go look that up. But yeah, so basically a little bit of the title graphic for the 8-Bit Adventures Chapter 1 comic book, which is, it's just going to be... basically the first chapter of the webcomic that I did after I rebooted it in 2015. So it's 100 comics, which it comes out to about 35 pages of comics, I think. The goal for that is to then add some full cover art splash pages. Just, you know, give something else to look at in the book and also, you know, get the page count, you know, up to about 50 is the goal. So, but yeah, goal for this week is to complete the cover. So got to figure out what sort of text might need to go on there. And it's, you know, I have most of the graphics done, at least the base stuff. And so then it's just sort of adding a bit more detail to everything. But yeah, very excited. The goal is to have a book be available by the end of November. That's the goal. The ultimate goal. I don't know if it's going to happen, but we're going to try and make it happen. Cause this has been on my list of things to do for a long time. And unfortunately I kind of, missed the ball, you know, dropped the ball on getting it done in a timely manner. For certain people. And, yeah, really want to buckle down and do it. So, but yeah, so chapter one will be titled Welcome to Pumpkin Ridge. So previously, like a lot of my chapters, like they didn't have chapter titles, or book titles. It was just, you know, sort of chapter one, chapter two. I think not until chapter four, I think, did I actually put like a title. And that was just Slice of Life. So yeah, very excited. And especially excited for everything to be coming together. So yeah, the ultimate goal is to complete that book cover. I will not be sharing what the full book cover looks like before the book is ready. So, and yeah, that'll be available through Lulu, which is sort of a self-publishing platform. And I got to work on some integrations, for this, you know, for the 8-Bit Adventures merch store and things like that. So yeah, very exciting. Goal is to get books in people's hands. So, and that, yeah. So that, you know, it wasn't when I said starting a piece of art for the book, the intention was to like put some art in the book, but technically the cover does count as art and I actually needed to work on a cover. So, there are some pieces that I already have done, that I'm going to throw into the book contents. But it just, you know, it felt a little cheap to then be like, oh, well, here's a graphic that I already have done and I'm just going to slap it in there and yay, I did it. Whereas the cover, like the cover has been built from scratch. So, yeah, super exciting. And then on top of just like all the, it just, I've had some really good, moments of getting stuff done around the house too. Couple with that. So I'm on an upswing despite, sort of a lot of still the back pain type stuff. But yeah, so definitely looking to complete the cover, by next week. And, then we'll see from there. I think it'll be adding artwork in the book from there. And then maybe trying to find, not an editor, but basically someone to look it over and be, and, you know, I guess maybe an editor, but, I mean, all the web comics are like already published. So like, I don't know if it makes any sense to go like it, to me, in my mind, it doesn't make any sense to edit the contents of the comics themselves so much as taking a look at just like other things in the book, like the copyright page and maybe like character bios and just be like, you know, do these make sense? Are these helpful to a new reader? Should there be a foreword of just like, hey, this is what 8-Bit Adventures is about. Cause this whole brand started with this webcomic. So, which originally started as a school newspaper comic called 8-Bit Williams. And then after I graduated, just became 8-Bit. And then I realized that's a terrible name for a comic because it's not distinct. So then I picked 8-Bit Adventures. And then, of course, found very quickly that that was not going to be distinct enough because although nothing at the time had been called 8-Bit Adventures, plenty of other things popped up. There was like a whole bunch of TTRPG, like it was a whole bunch of like third party D&D books, like that popped up under that brand. Somebody made a game for Steam, eventually two games for Steam with that name. So yeah. But this brand came first. And that's why the channel is the name it is. So, all right. I'm going to stop dragging things out. But because I was just very excited to show off the little snippet of graphic that I did. And for the audio listeners, again, it's, images of that are available on, our page on Facebook and on Twitter. I will also throw it up on Instagram, if, you know, you follow there. So yeah, it's also on Patreon for all the patrons. I did a post up there. So that is going to wrap things up for our show this week. Thank you all so much for joining me. I know it was a little bit of a short, episode, but sometimes it happens, you know. We're still in a weird time where there's just not a lot of stuff happening. Like, it's yeah. You'd think there'd be more happening, but I feel like maybe next month is going to be the thing where like a lot of the news comes out because we're starting to get into the holiday season. So yeah, that's going to wrap things up for this week. If you would like to see more content from 8-Bit Adventures, you can check out 8-BitAdventures.com. Over there hosts comics, artwork, podcast feeds, or the podcast VODs rather, and things like that. If you would like to help support this content, the best way to do that is to become a patron at patreon.com/8BitAdventures. Patrons get early access to comics when I got to get back into making the comics again. Got to get back into a rhythm of actually doing stuff. But early access to comics, behind the scenes content, some D&D, you know, homebrew stuff that I work on. And exclusive Discord channels and things like that. So, and I mean, you can become a patron for as little as $1 a month. So that, I mean, that's like a fifth of the cost of a Twitch sub. And I get more out of that than I do a Twitch sub. So, I get like a bigger share of that. So just saying, keep that in mind. Big shout out and thank you, to all of the support from current patrons. Thank you very much. Your support is appreciated. And just thank you. Speaking of which, for Twitch subs, as a reminder, you get one free Amazon Prime sub a month. Just saying, if you could throw that my way, I'd really appreciate it. But I also understand if you're using it for other things, that's fine. But you do get one free sub. It's got to be re-upped every month. So just as a reminder. Lastly, our opening theme is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. As a note, he did not create this for the podcast. He made it and is gracious enough to let us use it. So you can go check out his work at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. Great chiptune stuff over there. Does a bunch of original work, does covers. It's great. So shout out and thank you to Professor Shy Guy. And with that, folks, we're done. So thank you all for tuning in. Whether you're tuning in live or listening on the audio podcast feed. And as always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.